Steve Dale's Petcast. Pets are always there for you. They're a dependable source of unconditional love and support. For a short time, they're your best friend. But for them, you're their best friend for their entire lives. This is Steve Dale's Petcast.
Brought to you by Farm to Pet. Batch-made single-ingredient pet treats direct from the farm to your pet. Because all pets deserve the best treats. Order now at farmtopettreats.com.
Indeed, welcome to another Petcast. And this guy is an icon. Professor Emeritus of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology at the University of Colorado in Boulder. And his awards and distinguished honors go on forever. He's written, I believe, Dr. Mark Beckoff has authored, 500,000 books. I mean, every week it seems you come out with another book, Dr. Beckoff. I don't know how you do it. And some of those books, the co-author happens to be Dr. Jane Goodall. It is always a pleasure to speak with you. Your most recent book, Dogs Demystified, an A to Z guide for all things canine. And that is where I want to begin. You know, have we, Dr. Beckoff, in some ways, the human-animal bond is more intense, I think you'd agree, than it's ever been, at least in the United States. Are we getting to the point where in some cases we've romanticized or humanized what dogs really are?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's a good way to – I think that's a really interesting thing. I think – or way to look at it. No, I think what people are realizing now are a number of things. Number one, it could be due to the pandemic, but probably not necessarily directly, is people feel a lack of connection with other animals, and the entrance into the world of animals is often dogs or cats or perhaps other companion animals. And I think the other thing is that, you know, I just had a second edition of my book called The Emotional Lives of Animals come out. More and more people are interested in, if you will, animal sentience, the ability to feel, and animal emotions. And I really think that that is the hook, because my emails ring off the hook sometimes with people asking really good questions about what their dogs and, you know, it could be dogs and cats and other animals who they see in the wild are thinking and feeling. I really believe that this is a paradigm shift.
So we know that having a dog is good for us. There's been demonstrable evidence that it benefits human health. And through all sorts of different ways, both emotional health and physical health, because we're out there taking our dogs for a walk, and walking, It turns out to be good for us. There have been several studies that have finally been done about the reverse, that we are also good for dogs. One of those studies is the dogs were they were looking at their brain waves, essentially, to put it simply, and when their owner walked into the room and they either heard their owner's voice or something that belonged to their owner and therefore smelled like the owner was presented to the dogs, all the positive neurons lit up. Do you believe that this is a sort of both ends of the leash?
I do. I mean, I'm always hesitant to say always for anything, except I know if I jump off my roof, I'll always go down, not up. but yeah, I mean, I know some people who would like to have dogs, and they know that they can't give them a good life, which I think is a great decision not to have a dog. But yeah, the reciprocal bonds that are formed, I call the emotional connection social glue. And I really think that that's how it works, that when we appreciate and we can actually feel the emotions that other animals, including dogs, are feeling, it's the glue that binds us together. You know, pet rocks and robotic dogs just really didn't make it. And that's because of the lack of that shared, alive, if you will, social bond. I think that's really critical. And I think more and more people when they allow themselves, if you will, to feel it, are much more sensitive to it and realize that their companion dog really needs love and has to feel safe and trusting. So I really do think, like I said, it's a paradigm shift where more and more people are aware that they can play a role, of a very positive role, in the emotional and physical well-being of their dog.
Now, I don't know if I've ever asked you this question directly, and this is kind of what I'm getting at. Some number of years ago, let's say 15, 20 years ago, when I was first starting out, which probably is over 20 years ago, but that's another matter, I would go to an event, a conference, and hear a speaker, and someone might raise their hand and say, but do dogs really love us? And the answer was very quickly, no, we're capable of that, but dogs, no, not really love. Mm-hmm. They may like us. You could tell they're enjoying to be with us. It's their choice to be with, but they don't love us. So here's my question for you. International Human Animal Bond Day, November 8th. Do dogs really love us?
I think so. I mean, if you define love in a sort of generic way of having a special feeling for another being or beings, missing them when they're gone, seeking them out when you have a choice of other individuals, sure, they do. And I think that a lot of people don't like to think about it because sometimes I think a lot of humans are confused. And I don't mean it in a negative way at all, but what love really means. But, you know, I've studied wild coyotes, I've been with wild wolves and foxes and penguins and birds. If you collect the data on, say, what attracts them to one another and how they interact, you could substitute human or dog or bird or wolf or coyote in there. So I think that they can love us, but I don't think their love is unconditional, because that's one of the two myths that I really have written a lot about, is people will say, well, my dog will love me no matter what I do. I don't think so. They may display it because if you leave them all day and you come home and they jump on you and they're wagging their tail, then, you know, you could mistake that for love. But, yes, I think dogs can feel a deep love for us and for other dogs.
Yeah, in fact, you point that out in your book, Dog Demystified, an A to Z guide for all things canine, and that is one of those things that people say all the time. It's unconditional. And I agree with you about that. You know, there are lots of symbiotic relationships between species on the planet where one species benefits from the other species and that other species benefits from the other species. There are many, many examples of that. Is there anything like the connection between humans and dogs, two predators, really, historically, that not only get along with one another, depend on one another? And in fact, one of your books, you write, this is something I never thought about until you wrote about it. If all the humans on Earth, I think this was your theory, if all the humans on Earth disappeared, would dogs still survive? Was that the hypothesis?
Yes. It's in a book called A Dog's World, Imagining the Lives of Dogs in a World Without Humans, that I wrote with Jessica Pierce. And what we concluded was that a lot of dogs would do very well. I mean, so, you know, first-generation dogs who were around, if we all disappeared, might miss us. Certain dogs would, and I don't mean that in a negative way. Homed dogs rather than maybe free-ranging and feral dogs would miss us more. But, you know, subsequent generations, a lot of dogs would do very well on their own. But some people mistook that to mean that dogs don't form strong bonds with us. And I think the mistake that they made is that, like I said just before, first-generation dogs who had positive relationships with humans would miss us, just like they might miss us when we leave for a day or when we leave and someone else cares for them or, you know, during situations when we're gone. But, you know, And that could also be an indicator of real, true, genuine love. And I have never understood, you know, if you will, why people question whether dogs can love. Or other animals, for that matter, can love one another. It makes no sense to me. And like I said, you know, people might say, well, dogs might love one another because, you know, we've domesticated them. And, you know, in their genes, there's something human-centric that draws them to us. No, go spend a couple of hundred hours watching wild wolves or coyotes or foxes or bears or other animals, and you will see behavior patterns that show very clearly a strong reciprocal bond between or among members of the same species.
Well, your friend Dr. Jane Goodall showed this, and at that time, blew people away when she demonstrated the chimpanzees. Now but back then, when she first researched chimpanzees and followed them in their environment at Gombe National Park, is I believe where she was at, she showed us on national television those National Geographic specials that many of us remember. That yes, chimpanzees are capable. You know, when you look up the definition of love, I found in one place, and I don't remember where that was, one of those definite. You know, when you look up certain words, sometimes you see one definition, and then they have another definition and another. But one of those definitions was willing to risk your life for somebody else's. And there are so many anecdotal stories of dogs that have done just the house is on fire, you know, and the dog does this to say, well, now we can show all that with video. And I remember seeing a video of a dog that could have run out the door. The adults ran out the door and they were panicked. And this was all shown in a video. You could see it and the dog comes out pulling the adults were panicked because they knew the baby was in the house. And the dog comes out pulling the stroller scorched from the fire. The dog could have come out earlier. The dog went all through the house to find the baby. And it's a story that some would have said at one point in time, I wouldn't believe that would happen. Well, now you have to believe it because there is video, Dr. Beckoff.
Yeah. I mean, there's a good number of examples among wild or free-ranging animals where you see the same sort of behavior, you know, showing compassion and empathy for other individuals in need. You know, it's always easy for some humans, certainly not all, certainly not you and me, to discount or write off these sorts of behaviors as being instinctual or, oh, we're just reading into them. But, you know, once again, I've spent thousands of hours watching different kind of wild animals, and you will see interactions that reek, if you will, of compassion and empathy for individuals in need. So a lot of people would say, well, we're the only species, you know, who has those feelings or does those things, but that's very anthropocentric, you know, and it's basically what we call speciesist, thinking that, no, only we care about other individuals. And, you know, once again, I think the paradigm shift is continuing with more and more people studying dogs and cats and companion animals as well as wild animals. And I'm also sort of an evolutionary biologist, and it would be impossible for me to believe that you could have the evolution of very complicated social networks, say in a pack of wolves or, you know, a flock of birds, where you don't have those emotions arise.
What is, do you think, the biggest misconception that we have about dogs?
Well, I think there's a couple. I call them myths. I mean, one misconception, like I alluded to, is that they're unconditional lovers when they're not. Anybody who's rescued a dog who's had a tough upbringing or, you know, a really bad childhood would know that. No, you have to earn their love and their trust. The other is that they're our best friends. You know, they're not our best friends. I mean, my dogs may have been my best friends, and your dogs and other people's dogs may have been their best friends. But, you know, there's a significant amount of dog abuse in the world.
Yeah.
So I'm very careful about that. And that's, you know, something that Jessica and I wrote about in A Dog's World. And we also wrote a book called Unleashing Your Dog. So there's nothing wrong, if you will, in saying, well, dogs can be a human individual's best friends, but let's not cash it out across the species. And since we're talking about human-animal relationships, let's not kind of, you know, send out mistruths about dog-human relationships. Yeah, we can only hope that most of them are very satisfying and reciprocal, but we know that they're not universal.
I have one more question for you. Who's better? Yeah. Who's better, dogs at training us or us at training them?
Well, I always say I'm not a dog trainer, but my dog sort of trained me. Sometimes I sit there going, did I really do that? but, you know, in a serious way, you know, dogs, you know, just like we can be and other animals, dogs can be very demanding when they really need us. Or they love us, you know, and they really want our attention, or they want us to do something that they themselves can't do. So for a home dog, it might be taking a walk, getting fed. Oh, I got to go out and pee and poop. Please open the damn door. but you know, and I laugh when you ask that question, Steve, because I used to say my dogs have really trained me well. but you know, I think that it's a good way to look at it, because the reciprocity, you know, other people can, quote, train you too, to say or not say things they don't like, to
True.
Do or not do things they don't like. And, you know, you can cash it out as a form of training or conditioning. But I think getting back to the development of these really strong two-way give-and-take negotiable dog-human bonds, it's got to be give-and-take. It just, that's, to me, the ideal situation would be, sometimes you're not going to get to do what you want, Rusty or Fido, but most of the time you will. And Mark, sometimes you're not going to get to do what you want to do, but most of the time you will. And then how do you weave that together into a really tight and symmetrical relationship?
Well, I know you're a big supporter of the human-animal bond and the Human-Animal Bond Association, which developed international. It's International
Yep.
Human-Animal Bond Day, November 8, to focus and to call out this unique bond we have not only with dogs but other companion animals. And actually, more than that, I mean, with honeybees, without them, where would we be? Without bats, where would we be, you know? And lots
Yep.
of other species,
Yep.
as you point out, on the planet. Having this International Human-Animal Bond Day to call attention to the bond on November 8, a good idea, you think?
I think it's a wonderful idea, because I always talk about and have written about what, you know, animals who I call our wild neighbors. And what I love, too, like I said before, is that I really think it's a huge shift. I think of dogs as a gateway species. I often say that we can use dogs to cross an empathy gap. And so something I've been saying for a really long time is, you know, would you do it to your dog? You see some kind of abuse of an animal and people go, oh, no, I never would. Well, it turns out that, you know, other animals are also sentient feeling beings. So if you wouldn't do it to a dog, or allow it to be done to a dog, then why would you do it or allow it to be done to another animal? So I think the Human-Animal Bond Day is just a wonderful idea. It really makes me smile.
Well, you make us smile, and actually you make us think a lot Check out his books. There are many of them, way too many for me to mention all of them. One of your most recent, or the most recent, Dogs Demystified, an A to Z guide for all things canine. Dr. Mark Beckoff, you know I always enjoy talking with you.
Well, thank you. The feeling is mutual, or else I wouldn't be talking to you.
Thank you, Dr. Beckoff.
We're finished.
That's it?
That's it. You've been listening to the PetCast Podcast.
Brought to you by Farm to Pet. Batch-made single-ingredient pet treats direct from the farm to your pet, because all pets deserve the best treats. Order now at farmtopettreats.com.